listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host for the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very talented and very great friend of mine, director Vikram Dasgupta. How are you, Vikram?
Hey, Nikki. I'm good. Wonderful to be here, man.
I should also preface this with writer-director, correct?
Yes.
You're like, yes, make sure it's in.
Well, I try to do as good as I can, but, you know, I generally wear both those hats, yes.
Well, you and I both know we've recently become very good friends, and I saw a lot of your movies, and I'm blown away, and I'm so excited to have you on Wake Up Hollywood. But let's go way back. Tell me the moment that maybe it was a movie that you saw, maybe it was something you watched. Tell me the moment that made you want to become a filmmaker.
Wow. I'm sure you asked this to most filmmakers and artists and musicians. It was not one moment in particular, actually. It was just being around my grandma and watching her tell stories. Like, that's really my most inspiring filmmaker was not a filmmaker. She was a grandmother. She was a grandma telling stories under a tree to a bunch of children in the neighborhood. And I wanted to do what she does for a living. And so filmmaking seemed like the tools of the century going forward. And I love movies. So that's how it kind of aligned itself. So it was never one moment that said, wow, I want to make movies now. I just want to tell stories. So yeah. Does that answer the question?
First of all, that's super fantastic. Did you get into photography? Did you get into, like, what was the first moment that you kind of knew I want to tell stories using, you know, film?
So being born in, you know, being born a Bengali in a Bengali household, there was a lot of influence of Satyajit Ray and those old school Bengali filmmakers like Mrinal Sen, Hrithik Ghatak. But then I'm also born in India, so there's also the big influence of Bollywood that is just a part of the big society. And but honestly, I had so many artists and musicians in my house to just have that kind of an open conversation with all the time. And part of that, I think, it's that diet of culture that I was so lucky to have, that makes you want to have a voice and want to basically hear and listen and tell stories. Because a lot of filmmaking is really listening. A lot of storytelling is listening. My dad would always tell me that an artist doesn't draw with his hand, he draws with his eyes. A musician doesn't sing with your voice, you sing with your ears. So storytelling is actually more listening than storytelling. So I think being born in a family that teaches you how to listen maybe helps you want to be a storyteller.
I love that. I've never heard that. And I'm going to steal that from you because it's amazing.
Do it. Do it, man.
I love that. It's so incredible. So were you influenced at all by Western films, or was it mostly Bollywood and the things that you kind of grew up around that were like the first influences?
It was everything. It's everything. You know, you can't really, I think just the ability to connect with people through stories that I just mentioned my grandma did. My dad was in advertising, so watching him, connect with the masses, with, like, copywriting. Like, I knew the word copywriting before I knew what copying someone's notes in school meant. So to me, copy was actually the text that comes below an advertisement. Before teacher would tell me, don't copy your neighbor's answers. Like, that's what I would know. So. And then my uncles are scientists, and they would talk about molecules and biology and chemistry like humans and individuals that are interacting and coming together and decimating. So there was the overall vibe of storytelling in my family, no matter what field they're from. Hollywood obviously played a major role. I mean, you know, like watching those great Hollywood films growing up, like old school, like a lot of Westerns, like even like stuff like Lawrence of Arabia, Ben-Hur. I was so moved by, I'm born in the 70s, so I'm kind of old. So I remember watching films like Ben-Hur in the theater, and then, and then also watching E.T. and Jurassic Park, all of that, the transition, Terminator, the new wave of Hollywood films. But also there was a lot of influence of, you know, like I said, those art house films like Pathet Panchali and, you know, stuff by Renoir, The River, like stuff like that. So it's everything. It's everything, really. It was not one isolated incident at all. But also something that I, if I can quickly say that I think filmmakers, we generally tend to feel like films are what influences the filmmaker. But to quote Satyajit Ray, the essence of cinema is life. You should be actually looking at life to be influenced to make films instead of other films. So I think that's what I'm trying to do. You know, even as a documentarian, that's what really, you know, keeps me going, because I just get to observe and see people. And that's awesome.
I love that. Tell me what kind of stories your grandma would tell you that were they like fantasy? Were they kind of like crazy, whimsical stories, fables? What kind of stories?
So the biggest story that I've heard the most is the Mahabharata, the great Indian epic. So I was like, I knew that. I mean, I still know that at the back of my hand, because those are the stories that were, I would have favorites. And if you would have favorites, we'll ask you to tell that particular story of Krishna, or that particular story of Arjuna, or that particular story when they were kids, or a particular battle scene. I call them scenes because to me it's a film, because I could see it. But I think Mahabharata is one of the biggest influences of my life to ever want to be a filmmaker. I'm not saying that I hope in some way and form I can, I don't know. I don't even want to say that I want to make the Mahabharata. It's too big to even say for a nobody filmmaker like me. But that's the dream. I mean, I would love to figure a way of telling that story on the bigger screen, or the smaller screens, or any screen for that matter, wherever the audience gravitates to it. That's what really matters. It's the audience, right? It's like wherever they come, wherever they can resonate to you. And that is the story that actually made me want to be a filmmaker. Whether or not I'll ever end up to being in a position to make it in the way I want to make it, time will tell. But it's a worthy enough pursuit to have, I think.
Do you think parts of that story kind of seep into your films and short films, like in one way or another?
You know, Nikki, the interesting thing about Mahabharata is that it's thousands of years old.
Right.
But its relevance is everywhere. Even now, that's what it's so insane about it. Like, it teaches you about every relationship that there is, like how a brother should be with a brother, how a good brother should be, how a bad son is, how a good father is, how a bad neighbor is. Like, it just encompasses the entire vocabulary of human relationships in that book, 18 books, actually, thousands of years old.
I don't know the story.
It's so, so relevant, man. It is, and it's just so basic and layered at the same time that everyone can relate to it. But when you start relating to it on a different level, it grows with you. Like any great piece of literature, when you, like, I saw 2001: A Space Odyssey when I was 20, then I saw it when I was 40, and then I saw it once in the middle when I was 30. And every time that film was different for me, because it grew with me, because I'm only limited by my own self.
Right.
Same with Mahabharata and any other piece of really beautiful literature. Is the only limiting factor is how you are addressing it. You know,
yeah,
that's it. Same with music. You know that, right?
I love, it's like a living art form, and it's like it grows with you.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
As you learn different lessons, different parts of the story or film or music, they resonate with you in a different way. So I love that story is always kind of like your Bible. It's your North Star. You know?
It is a North Star. It's a bit, and I think I'm not the only one. I mean, I think a lot of South Asians born in that time period, or even after or before, It is a bit of a North Star for any storyteller, filmmaker, literary, you know, anybody who's a writer, a poet, because it kind of encompasses the entire culture, but also doesn't limit itself to the culture. It goes beyond the culture. It goes to a very universal level of just humanity and you know, the basic. So, yeah, it's great. I mean, so that would be the one story that I heard over a million times from her. Yes.
And did you go to film school? Did you have like an environment in India that was like pro-creative to kind of give you the tools necessary for storytelling?
Great question, man. So I wanted to go to film school right after my high school, and my father told me that you should focus on one frame before 24 frames per second. Mm. So he said, maybe you study fine arts and painting for 5 years. I said, fine arts? I said, yeah, you know, take it as a gift from me. Just go and just be amongst artists. Just paint, just draw. More importantly, you don't have to do anything. Just observe. Just 5 years, go to an art school and just be amongst artists. And I think that was the biggest gift. I mean, you know, I lost my father a year and a half back. You know that. I'm dealing with the grief myself. But I think that was the biggest gift that he gave me, is the gift of time. The gift of time to actually spend with yourself in a garden, trying to look at a tree and trying to draw it and trying to realize your limitations, that no matter how good you are, you're never going to be as good as what you're seeing. But you're better than how you were when you started earlier today. So it shows you the bigger picture and yet limits you. And in that limitation, you find how unlimited you can be. And I think those poetries, you have some time as a kid, as a teenager, for yourself. And that is huge, man. Like, so I finished my fine arts graduation in Calcutta, one of the oldest art schools in the country, built in the 1800s. That was awesome. And I took painting and I took, live drawing. And then I came to study film in Canada, in Toronto.
What's amazing about that is your dad had the foresight to kind of like give you less, you know, to work with in the sense of the amount of frames, so that you could cultivate and be seasoned as an artist and tell and express more with one frame than just giving you unlimited access to 24 frames and just kind of like not savoring the process to go from film to, from painting to film, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's the idea of limiting yourself to that one image and the idea, what are you seeing? And then what are you seeing, and what does that do to you? And I think we are just, especially today, there's so much imagery and so much of stuff coming at you that time that I had to just focus in one thing, one detail of one leaf. And it sounds silly, but it's very zen. It really centers you. And even at times, actually, after I lost my dad, I've kind of gone back to spending the early hours every morning in painting, and I like doing that. And it's just great because it's almost meditative. You know, it's right. I can see you do that playing a guitar, sitting somewhere, and just meditating. And I think to me, he gave me the tools to be centered when everything else is not, because filmmaking is madness, right? Like shooting a documentary for 7 years or whatever, however long time, or 7 days, it is absolute madness. And you need that kind of that in your toolkit to meditate, to be able to just cut yourself off and just be singular in some way. So that helps.
I once heard Bono say this and it kind of struck me. He said, his father was an opera singer and always loved opera, and like, you know, he would go to these cathedrals and see stained glass windows. And he said, that was when I realized that was the first cinema that ever existed. Because you have lights telling stories.
Wow. And,
how it's like changing throughout the day. And then you see how, has evolved. I love that painting, which is such an analog way to create, and it's such a time consumption as far as like one part of the picture. It can take hours, it can take years, it can take, you know what I mean? And the thing about just like savoring to create that one image, how did you develop and how did you learn to draw from painting into filmmaking to frame things in a certain way?
See, that's the thing. I think the idea of being able to frame one image is not just framing one image. You're looking at the context, you're looking at subtext, you're looking at the characters, you're really looking. I think what it does is when you're doing a life drawing, you're actually really learning to look at that person and the emotion and maybe if you look a little deeper, you can see the kind of day he's had or she's had. And I think that ability to just observe people from a documentary standpoint and let them be comfortable, because you're not expecting anything from a live model. You're not expecting anything. I think we ask too many things off of our subjects initially as young filmmakers, you know. Right. As myself, I want you to do this. I want you to look over there. I want you to look into the distance. But I'm like, really what you need that to do is to create the space for that person to exist. And then everything you'll need will follow. And I think drawing someone or drawing a subject, doesn't have to be someone, could be a tree, or, you know, drawing a life drawing, it teaches you to be patient. I think that's what it does. It teaches you to be patient and not, and yet be on the journey towards the goal, but not chase it too hard, because then you're too caught up in actually, you may lose the bigger picture. And I think it's those deeper philosophies that can transcend to your work, hopefully. I don't know, man. I'm just trying shit out. I have no clue what I'm doing.
No, I love that though, because like directors are kind of like, they're really like the unspoken heroes of the film world in a lot of ways, because it's like, it's their vision, it's their story, it's their painting, it's their scripts a lot of times, in your case especially. When you were starting, you know, when I was looking at your films, short and long form, I was like, this guy knows how to tell stories. In any medium, you know how to tell stories, in short form, in long form, in any style, from documentary to drama, whatever it is. Tell me, like, when it comes to cultivating a story and telling a story, depending on the medium, how do you kind of like put this together and cultivate a story that you think is like a through line as far as you, the artist and filmmaker, to the audience?
I mean, since you mentioned the different mediums that I've had the opportunity of dipping my toe in, I would say fiction, or writing fiction versus documentary, they're quite different muscles for the creative process. Fiction, you want to tell a particular story. There's something in you that you want that makes you realize that this is a story that you need to tell, because it has personal connection ties from culture, from your who you are, from what you're facing, fish out of water, all of those nuances that you are going through. And you're trying to write that, and you're trying to embellish and tell a story with characters that have arcs, characters that are subtext, characters that are not too written, all of those things, right? And then you take all of that knowledge and you throw it away, because documentaries is kind of not, all of those things actually work against you when you're making a documentary. Because right. Then you're trying to force an idea, you're trying to force a character, you're trying to force a subject, you're trying to force the person to be a certain way and want it to end, because that's what gets you going. But the idea of a documentary is you take everything you know about fiction and realize that that is you wanting to make a film. But a documentary makes itself. You just have to be there. You just have to make sure you're there for it, for life to happen. It's like a child being born. You can't do shit, man. A child is going to be born with or without you. All you can do is be there to capture it in some way. And I think and I also feel every fiction director, young fiction directors like me, and I'm not young at age, but I'm just young in experience, I think. I've only done this for, 20 years now? Like, I'm nothing. Like, you know, I've barely scratched the surface, but every fiction filmmaker should make documentaries, at least for a little bit time of their life, because it teaches you how to deal with limitations. You have no time to light, you have no time to, there's no repeat. Especially right. if you're shooting in situational things, this guy is gonna go to his township and do a dance as an homage for his teacher who died over sunset.
Right.
Surrounded by kids or not, we don't know. And you have one shot at capturing it, if you're any good. And right. He's going to be dancing, so he's going to be moving all over the place. And you have one camera, so there is no five camera setup and a drone. No, there's none of that. You're basically holding your camera guy who's holding the camera for dear life and a sound guy behind you, and you're running around him as he's dancing at the sunset with all his heart. So you realize what are the things you can lose. You can lose the light, you can lose whatever, but you can't lose the heart.
Right.
And that's what documentary focuses you, is what is important, what are the things you can let go of, and how fast can you do it? And in fiction world, when the producers are breathing down your neck and you have time for only 100 extras instead of 5,000, and you need one more extra cop car, what is the thing that you can lose? And what are the things that you need to have? I think that's what doing a documentary hopefully will help me make those choices if I make a fiction one day. So they both service each other, but I think that doing documentaries is something that I have huge respect for after having done it.
You made a tremendous documentary. Beyond Moving, No Bullshit, is one of the best docs I've ever seen. And I've sharing it with so many people. You put your lifeblood into it too. It took you 7 years to make. And just to brief people, it's about a young kid in South Africa in the townships learning ballet, which is not an art form readily available to kids in Africa. And he ended up getting a scholarship in Canada to dance. He's still dancing professionally. And his brother, also is a very talented dancer. How did you kind of like shape this story and this subject to be the core and central arc of your storytelling?
Wow. Loaded question. it only took me 7 years. So yeah, I can answer that in like a minute. Sipe, the person you're talking about is Sipe. Sipe is by far one of the most profound human beings I've met. I met him when he was 14, and I think we shot it till he was in the 20s, early 20s or 19 or something like that, I think. So we shot him for all that time. And he is currently the principal dancer of the National Ballet of Canada.
Wow.
He is the Romeo in Romeo and Juliet. He is the prince in Swan Lake. He is the guy. And my job was to just be there, actually, you know? And he and the medium of documentary taught me. And I was just there learning. And that's really what it is. And you're very kind about it. And I'm glad you like it, man. I know that the film resonates to you.
Oh, man, from the first frame, I'll tell you. I watched it and I remember the first sweeping shot you had of South Africa. I was like, this guy knows how to shoot movies. Right away, I was like, I'm already in this movie and it's only like a minute that I've been watching it. Because I just knew. It's like, you have to grab people right away. That's the hard part with filmmaking. It's like, you can lose people really fast. You know, it can just be, you can have all of the costumes and lighting in the world, but if you don't have the what's the best way to the strength of storytelling and the strength of telling those stories with moving pictures that captivate, you don't have much. It's just a lot of fluff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the idea that we were actually shooting six different dancers. Okay. Because at one time in my career, I was doing quite a bit of commercials, and I was doing stuff for the Paralympics, and I was doing commercials for the National Ballet School. And I made a piece for them that really worked very well to tell what they are bringing to the community. And then they wanted me to do a bigger piece for them. This is the Canada National Ballet School. And I suggested that it should be about the students and not the school. And they were so great in really resonating that idea. So I started interviewing all the kids, as many as I could. And Sipe, our guy, who eventually became the sole subject of the film, was number five. He was number five on the list of kids we were going to follow. But as we started following him, the other stories didn't, their arcs were not happening in the similar way that Sipe's was. We went with him to South Africa. We met his teacher who discovered him. She had an empty nest, kind of an emotional turmoil she was going through. Sipe was a teenager. He was growing into his own human and their interaction. And as we followed it more and more, it became a much meatier story and a much inspiring story. So we had to lose the other stories in the process. Like, okay, fine, we won't make a short film about five, six dancers, they'll make it about three. And they're like, okay, we'll make it about one. But the story is still going. And then his teacher gets diagnosed for cancer. And then I'm like, the story is still going. And then, like, okay, it'll be a feature now. So at what point of time do you realize when to stop filming life happen in front of you? Because eventually you have to stop and you have to give the documentary a shape, and then you have to edit it for like a year. So, at one point, I think we left it off at the right place. I think we left it off as CPA, one of CPA's chapter finishing, and him stepping into the professional world, and that's when we're like, okay, we're done. He has to move on. I have to move on with the life, with my life, and he has to stop having a camera around him, you know, all the time. So,
it's such a cool part of his story too, because, you know, I came from the world of opera and I studied classically, and I really resonated with a lot of my professors. And sometimes what I also found with classical music, and there's a parallel between this and ballet, your teachers sometimes want you to be something they want you to be. Right. And I really understood that with Sipe's teacher, because she really wanted him to be a certain way, and he was just trying to find himself. Yeah. And in him finding himself, he ends up becoming an even stronger version of what she could have ever wanted him to be. And that's what is so captivating about the story. And the fact that there's all this extra drama with her, you know, having an illness, and him having distance in the connection and relationship, and then coming back to it. I mean, you really did a fantastic job telling the story. Let's play this trailer because I want people to start seeing it. This is Beyond Moving, and we'll talk more about it in a second.
How do you feel if ever Sibe quit dancing?
I got nausea.
Why?
Because in life, you are killing. By a dancer. What's your figure again? Oh, fear.
Okay, so this is our star Sipe. He had everything technically there, and he had an ability to move people.
Really little guy, he was one of the smallest, youngest kids on stage. Who is this kid? He's amazing.
Because when you're working with talent and you see it, you want it, you want...
I don't know if he was doing ballet or hip-hop, just that he took movement to places I have rarely ever seen before in a child.
I was like, wow, okay, this is him. The last time I saw him dance was next to me on the stage.
You'll be naked? No, oh, you are doing ballet.
Wala, yeah.
This is why I battle with ballet too, but you have to know this is why I'm doing this.
And why are you doing this?
So good, man. The trailer doesn't even do it justice. It's so good. So good.
So thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You follow this kid's career for these 7 years, or how long did you actually shoot his life?
Well, we were shooting him for 5 years, and then we were editing for a year and a half, but then things were still happening while you're editing, so we were also shooting during the edit. So, yeah, I mean, and the interesting thing was that Sipe saw it for the first time at the Hot Dogs Theater. Like, that's the amount of trust that Sipe had in us and in telling his story, because Sipe's family here, the family that adopted him, Kelly, is like one of the most amazing human beings that I've met. John and Mavis from the National Ballet School, they supported this whole journey. Sipe's mother, Mama Sylvia, Sipe's brother, like the number of people that we have met, you know, we stand on shoulders of giants, right? So the number of people that we have met who has made this story come alive, I don't think I made it. I feel I was just there. And making decisions and making little choices to see that I wasn't stepping and leaving a footmark, affecting it more than I should. Because that's a big part of filmmaking, is that you don't want to leave a footmark. Like, a lot of the editing was removing myself from the film, ourselves from the film. Like, how do we step away and let it be an uncluttered experience? And it's impossible, actually, because right. even when you watch a microorganism or an atom or a molecule through a microscope, it changes. It's fun. The second you place a camera, you're affecting it. You cannot place a camera and not affect the scene. You cannot, but you try. And it's that constant push and pull of how far can you go to remove yourself, and when you're not there, what do you accomplish, what do you lose, what do you gain? And these are the constant questions that any documentarian asks themselves, I'm sure. And we were facing those, and which is why when you make or write fiction, then all of a sudden everything seems too written and too acted and too done. And then you're like, okay, so this is all our footsteps everywhere. What am I going to do? So it's a great conversation to have as an artist within yourself when you're going from one medium to the other. Because even to do master one of anything takes more than a lifetime, right?
Right.
So, and in that case, should you just do one thing? And if that's the case, then yes, I will do that one thing, and that is storytelling. So then in that case, the medium is secondary. The storytelling is more primary for me. So then I'm not worrying about the medium. I'll just learn from one, move to the other, learn from painting, try to see what I can bring into documentary, learn from documentary, see if I can write a fiction that's better than the last one I wrote, and then move back to documentary. I mean, so it's really storytelling. So, yeah.
Well, yes. You shot, I love the dance scenes that you shot and the footage that you got of the two brothers kind of reuniting, because these two brothers used to dance together and then they were separated at a very young age for very close brothers to be separated. I mean, it's gut-wrenching to see that. And then it's so heartwarming to see them reunited and then dancing together and how you caught that. Have you ever seen that movie? It's a documentary. I think it's on crumping. I think Dave LaChapelle or somebody.
I've heard about it, yes.
He shot it really well.
Amazing.
And I actually think that you shot Beyond Moving better than he shot that. And it
Much,
much bigger budget for that, obviously. Because of the way you caught and captured the dancing and also the way you captured the story, they were like always interwoven between the family dynamics, the teacher dynamics, Sipe, his brother, Sipe kind of transitioning into this Western lifestyle, which I know had to be a little bit traumatic because he was so young when he left South Africa.
That's easy.
He's living with another family, you know, trying to cultivate his talents. And, you know, how did you kind of find the narrative in all of that? Was it Sipe? Was it how he impacted you? Was it the storyline, just how a kid from South Africa made this giant leap? Like, what shaped that?
I think editing a documentary is playing Tetris with your brain. It is probably, so I edited it for a year and a half to 2 years. Because it was difficult, because there were so many story angles and there's so many ways we could have explored the story even while we were editing it. And then it became a 2.5 hour long piece. The current documentary is only 84 minutes. And what we realized that everyone has baggage when you're in South Africa, right? Everything has that. And you are there and you feel it. And terminology that I did not know, like I'm considered colored there. I do not know that term. I'm colored. Sipe is black. There's black, white, colored. Like it's very the segregation or the vocabulary is much more like it's there. And it obviously has a history, which is not even that old history of, you know, of all of the stuff that it brings with it. So you do see that the documentary, or you can see the elements of racism in it and the elements that the society there has gone through on both sides of the table. And then you get swayed in by it. But then you realize that this documentary is about, actually it's about love. It's a love story between Sipe and Sipe's dance. It's a love story between a teacher that got left behind. It's a love story between the brothers. These are all love stories. And I think a love story goes further back than a story about race.
And Sipe's mother too. She had that same empty nest.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we focused on something that, because it would probably be more timely to make it about race, but I think it's more timeless to make it about love.
Yeah.
And I think
chills, man. That's so good.
Thank you. But we chose something that we felt it was a love story. And I'm a sucker for stuff like that. Like, I'm a freaking bleeding heart. So I'm like, I just see love, even in things like these. And I think, so that's when you started focusing on that. So that was our narrative. Whatever is close to Sipe, whatever is close to his journey of his heart, whatever is touching him stays. All of our baggage that we bring about what to expect, what it has gone through, what South Africa is, all of those things I'm not saying it's not important, but it took second stage to Sipe's journey.
Right.
What Sipe was going through became our main narrative. And everything else was like, there, you see it, but you see it as a backdrop of what our guy is going through. So that's what helped us. Once we realized that, and we realized it after a year of editing, that if it's not about Sipe, it's got to go. And that's how it became from 120 minutes to 84 minutes. This is Sipe's journey.
Right.
You know, and it's a love story.
And, you know, let's talk a little bit about this because it is important. It is a terrific documentary. There's no question about it. If you haven't seen it, people, go see it. Where can people see it, by the way?
It's on Apple TV, but I think that's on Apple TV Canada at the moment. So we're trying to get a US release. We do have an international distributor film option. Montreal is going to do a worldwide release soon. But before that, if anybody wants to watch it, if they reach out to me, I can point them in the right direction. Or
reach out to the director himself. He'll give you a link. That's how that works.
Or to Nikki.
Or I'll send it to you too, because it's worth it.
But Nikki has done that.
This documentary went to the biggest documentary festival in the United States, right? Or in the world, would you say?
I mean Hot Docs did a screening for 3 days at a theater, the Hot Docs Theater, for us in the Doc Soup category. And Hot Docs, I believe, is one of the world's biggest documentary festivals. But it was a week before pandemic. So we had San Francisco, everything lined up, and then everything got canceled or became online. So I don't think Beyond Moving had the kind of visibility that
it deserved.
That would have been good.
Absolutely.
But you know, you do things and you put it out in the universe and then you move on. And people like you, when they come across films like that, you know, you really gravitate to the story, and that's why we are talking about it after 3 years. So, well,
the funny thing is, it's like, you know, when you and I met, I was like, I can always tell good artists right when I meet them, and I was like, I know this guy and I are going to be good friends, and he's a good artist. Then I watched your Paralympian advertisement, and I was like, oh, this is shot super well. This is incredible. And then I watched Calcutta Taxi, and I was like, oh man, this is crazy. And after I finished those two, you said you should check out this movie, Beyond Moving. It's been kind of like my baby, you know? And I watched it and I was like, I remember you and I were texting. I'm like, I'm already watching this. And you're like, what? I said, yeah, I'm watching it. I'll hit you back after I finish. Because I knew 5 minutes into it, a minute into it, 30 seconds into it, it was going to be a great film because of the footage that you had, the subject, how it resonated with me. But really, it's not even about me. It's about how it resonates with people, because it is a story about love. It is a story about somebody trying to get good at something, even though the odds are against them.
Yeah.
Ascending, you know, beyond that. And that's what is the story that we all love. That is the hero's journey. Absolutely. So
yeah.
Sipe really exemplified that in a lot of ways. When Sipe actually saw it, what was his reaction?
Oh, we were both laughing and crying. It was, and then at one point in time, so this was at Hot Docs, and we had like, I don't know, a few thousand people there. And Sipe is like, what's that sound? And I'm like, I think that is audible sound of people crying in the audience. And I think it was funny because Sipe looks over, and your whole row of faces, and everybody was like bawling their eyes out.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was important for me how Sipe felt more than anybody else in the audience. For me, I was nervous about Sipe.
Right. Well, you're protective over him. That makes sense.
Yeah, but he has never seen it. He's kind of given me his whole life, saying, here you go. Make what you want out of it, man. I trust you. because he was young. He was 14 when he, so I had his trust. And right. The other person whose trust I had was somebody who wasn't even there at the end of the film. She didn't survive those 7 years.
Right.
So I had to do justice to both those trusts. And they were, yes, they were of different races. Yes, they were of different upbringings, backgrounds. But I had to make sure both their voices were heard in some way without taking sides. And that was difficult, man. Because it's easy when you have an agenda. You have a narrative. Okay, this is about that. But to do it without having that is kind of tough.
You hit it out of the park with the title, too. Like, titles are important to me. I've always loved titles of songs, titles of works, titles of films. And how did you come up with that, or how did it come about?
Thank you. I mean, I'm actually really relieved to hear you say that. Also because that was the one thing that I didn't choose. That was actually the title that was suggested by the school who was funding the initial project. I think they have a certain dance program for the community in which they go out and they teach dance and ballet to communities that wouldn't necessarily have access to these dance forms. And that program, I believe, is called Beyond Moving.
Wow.
Okay? So they were suggesting that name. I'm like, that's a brilliant name. I think that that's a great name. And so we all agreed on that. So I can't take credit for the name.
I love that. I'm so glad to ask that because I didn't know that part of the story. That's amazing. That is awesome.
Nobody had asked that question before because there's so many questions you can ask about Beyond Moving. Nobody actually cares about the name. So I'm really glad you asked, man.
Oh, titles are important. So I love that I encapsulated that. Let's switch gears a little bit to Calcutta Taxi. Because okay. This is another it's like an extremely well done short, and you shot this in India, which is not easy to do. Tell me a little bit about this process, and it did get to the Oscar 35, which is incredibly hard to get. You know, you got the Oscar bid, it made it to the final 35, it was showcased at Kodak Theater, it didn't make the last five, it should have because it's just a well made doc. And doc, or like, you know, not a doc, it's a well-made short. And, you know, a lot went into this. Tell me what started with the seed of the idea and how it kind of eventually evolved into making Calcutta Taxi.
Sure. Calcutta Taxi was basically based on an incident that actually happened to me because I was from Delhi and I'd gone to study in art university, 24 frames per second, all of that stuff. So I was there and I was a fish out of water. Okay. And I had no idea that when the Communist Party of Calcutta calls a strike, you don't leave your home, you stay at home. So I wanted to go meet my best friend and I had the history notes in my backpack. And I took it to his home to give him the history notes so he would study and pass. And I left his home and he's not there. The streets are empty. I'm like, this is weird. It's a holiday. Why are the streets empty? So I get in a cab. I put my backpack in there and I go get a bottle of water. The cab is gone. And I think, oh my God, my backpack is stolen. It's got all my notes in it. Then I get another cab. I said, oh my God, the guy just stole my backpack. Can he catch him? He said, yeah, get in the back. Let's go catch him. And as I get in that other cab, the guy asks me, what's in the backpack? I said, it's got notes in it. And he thinks it's money. So he's chasing a cab driver who stole a bag full of money, which is actually my history notes. And then that's the nucleus of the idea, what happened that day. So, you know, this actually happened to me. So this was a story that I had in my mind. And then I told it to a friend of mine here in Toronto. And she literally fell out of the chair laughing. She's like, you got to write this down. And she made me write this down. And I had it written as a treatment. Okay. And then later on, I come across this person at a party and she kept losing her bag. And I told her this story. And that was Judy Gladstone from Bravo. And she was like, do you want to make this into a short film? I run a channel that funds people with short film ideas. It's called Bravo Fact. And I'm like, no, I don't think this is a film. I don't know. It's a scene. She's like, do you have a written script? I said, no, I have a treatment. So, and I'm like, and it's three stories about the guy who stole the backpack and me and all of that stuff. She's like, she reads it, she's like, just make it into three films, make it a three-part film. And then she literally saw the idea. And then I said, okay, if I was to do it, I would go to India and shoot it. And that's how it got made. And then we went.
How long was the shoot?
The shoot was 14 days. And wow. And I had a Canadian crew, like one of my closest friends, Jeff Mahar, went with me. The Canadian actress, Anand Rajaram, Vipin Sharma, who you guys know from Tare Zameen Pe. He plays the father opposite to Aamir Khan. He's a brilliant actor. And the other lead was from here. And yeah, so we went there. We stayed there. We shot it in 14 days. It was a long shoot. And we came back. And then we edited it. And then it went to like 50 festivals. And it just kind of won a shit ton of festivals. And then we had a great time.
Well, let's put it on the record, because you beat a very significant film director for this Oscar bid. You beat Damien Chazelle, and Damien Chazelle even, you know, kind of acknowledged. He said, I knew your film was going to win because I had a beginning, middle, and end. And he was at the time showcasing the short from Whiplash.
Yes.
Especially now when you look back at it, you're like, that's got to be a pretty good feeling knowing that that happened, you know?
No, he was. Actually, I was surprised because his film was fantastic. Like, it actually, the short had J.K. Simmons in it. And I was like, this is amazing. Wow. I was blown away by it. That was a great night. We had a great time. And that was in Aspen. Yeah. Oh my God. That was a fun time. Like Calcutta Taxi was a fun film to have to be made in such a small budget and to have gone to so many festivals.
Yeah, let's play the trailer. Here's the trailer for Calcutta Taxi.
I went to the store to get a bottle of water. The cab driver took off with my bag. Can you help me?
Yeah, Murari.
So awesome. Tell me a little bit, like, what was the total number of people that were in the cast and crew?
Oh, fairly small. I would say five or six of us from Toronto. My father really helped me there, put the production together, because he just wanted to be there with me.
That's awesome.
Like, I told him that I wanted to go to Calcutta, and he's like, okay. And he's already booking his ticket. Like,
awesome.
He was there way before me, and he was, yeah, I just miss him so much. He was it's kind of difficult to actually deal with a loss of somebody that is so much a part of your life.
Right.
I'm sorry, I don't want to go away from
that. Okay. That's okay, yeah.
But it's kind of interesting because you have to kind of rebuild what you are doing things for.
Right.
Because that person that you, your biggest supporter, your biggest champion, your best friend is not there. I mean, physically or whatever you want to believe. And so you have to kind of go inside and understand why you're really doing it. And so, yeah, so he was there. And then we had a scene with 200 extras. But in Calcutta, when you're shooting a scene with 200 extras, 400 people come to see the shoot.
Right.
So you have to position them behind the other extras so they become a part of your extra. So it's so filmmaking is just problem solving, man. That's what it is. It's really problem solving on acid. That's what it is. It's like, and so you want the more problems you solve, the better you'll get next time, but you'll not have the same problems next time. Next time it'll be a teacher and a student dancing in Africa. So it'll be a different problem, but you'll just have more experience knowing that it's okay. It's okay.
Are you shooting in India? That is not an easy process because it is kind of like a loose cannon. There's so many variables that can change how successful the shoot can be just based on the weather, the people, the amount of people. Tell me a little bit about the obstacles that went into this.
Dude, like last week, I met my cinematographer and one of my close friends, Jeff, who shot Calcutta Taxi. We actually met, we were talking downstairs. Remember that day when we were in this room of a godfather who was like telling us that if we were to shoot in Calcutta, these are the things that we need to do. And then remember the time when somebody pulled a knife on your father and they were planning on bombing our set?
Wow.
If we didn't pack up or if we didn't pay them the money. And I'm like, yeah. And then you come to Toronto and people are upset that there's not enough fizz in their Sprite. You're like, dude, it's not a problem. You know what I mean? It just puts things in perspective. I think that's what India does very well. Is like when you have people that are being threatened for life on set and you're trying to get your scenes done before the light goes away, it kind of prepares you. Like you get bothered a lot less by the usual, I think. So that's what we gain from Calcutta. Like I've not been stressed out on too many sets after that.
I mean, I can imagine because that's like you're in the circus at that point, right?
Pretty much. And people running around and cops, real cops versus cops in costumes. And then there are people that are like really there because they're from the different political parties that want their own things to be shown. Why, you know, why is that logo being shown? Why is that not in the right place? How much money and who have you paid? Who have you bribed? You have to bribe someone to bribe the right person because otherwise, you know, so it's a different kind of a muscle. And it's, you know, it's great. It's filmmaking is film school, man. What can I say?
Like, and I have a question. How come you didn't make the whole movie in Hindi, Tamil? Like, how did you kind of want to bridge the gap? Maybe, or what was the perspective in having a lot of it in English?
I think it's because it's in India. Everybody speaks a different language and everybody kind of understands the other person. Like somebody's speaking Urdu, somebody's speaking Hindi, Bengali, English, but everybody's having a conversation. So I'm like, if I'm making a film there, that's how it should be. Or at least that's what I thought then. Because people, it's such a beautiful hodgepodge of emotion and languages and flavors of food and clothing and color. And you can't just say, I'm going to make it in this language because this is what. But I mean, you can. But at that point in time, it felt like, let's just go with what would this person be speaking and what would he be talking to? And the guy from Canada, what would he be speaking in? And, the one thing I changed in it was my character is actually gone back to study in Calcutta from Canada as opposed to me going to Calcutta from Delhi. So that was a Canadian angle and it kind of helped us get the funding. So, yeah.
Well, what's cool too, it's like I've been to India many times and the chaos, you really capture the chaos of the taxi scene. Like that is how it is. And it's like no other place in the world where it's like that. And it's just like, you know, it is this circus to get from one place to the other. And also the roads are crazy. I mean, it's like an Indiana Jones movie and you're just going to a restaurant or going to somebody's flat or whatever you're doing. So tell me like how that became a character in this short.
I don't think we had a choice.
Right.
You don't have a choice. You either embrace it or you make a film that looks fake.
Right.
So we embraced it and we're like, okay, it is crazy. We are all gonna go through this. We're gonna go through the ringer. And then you come out with something that looks, if you can make it look genuine enough, it looks genuine because India has that kind of madness to it. The film is still a little bit old now, so whenever me and Jeff we see, we're like, I don't know. It looks, you know, we are never happy with what we have done, with what we've ever done. We hate everything we've done.
That's how the artist is. Yeah.
So I don't think even if we had shot it differently, we would still hate it. But I think, like you said, I think that the thing that we used to do, I don't want to take it away in a different direction, but when I was first starting to do fine arts and painting, my dad would tell me that take your best whatever painting you've done or your little life drawing or whatever you've done, put it up on the wall in front of you, okay? That's the best you've done. And then when you have the next one that is better than that, put that up, okay? And how fast you're growing, you will know that as how fast you change it. So if you're constantly hating what you've done last, means that you're kind of already on the right path.
Right. Okay?
Right. And I think so. It's a good sign that I dislike everything I've ever done. I hope.
I like that because I'm always making records and I kind of always feel like you're always improving the process.
Yeah.
What we do as artists, it's like you're just trying to improve your process and increase your draw, increase your power of storytelling and do it with more abilities and try to do it with less at the same time, you know? So tell me, as you grow into filmmaking, what is the biggest obstacle for you as an artist? Is it just getting the narrative, or is it getting the audience, or is it dealing with the marketing and the business side of it? What are some of the biggest parts of obstacles for you as an artist?
The answer to that should be a 5-part book. What kind of a question is that? That's like, just explain.
Because we showcase the art of the creative process, and that's a big part of what we love to do.
That's
why I built the show. But you know, a lot of people don't realize how shady the business is, how difficult the business is, how incredibly saturated the market is to even know about artists like yourself. Like you're an extremely talented storyteller as a filmmaker. I've only seen the tip of the iceberg as to what you're gonna make, but you make extraordinary films. And
appreciate
you know about it. And I want people to hear like what you find to be the biggest obstacle for you just getting to where you want to be as a filmmaker, or getting the right audience or the right marketing or the right parts of the industry behind you.
It's a tough question. Creatively versus from a business standpoint, I think creatively it is, I think it is trying to be honest to yourself. I think that is the real North Star. As I was growing up in a family of artists, I would hear them talk about, oh, you have to be honest to yourself. Oh, that doesn't look honest. And I'd be like, what exactly? And I would ask, what exactly does it mean? Honest as in I'm not stealing money from it? Like what, as a kid, like what exactly does it mean to be honest?
Right.
And I think at this point of time in my life, I'm 47 at this age, and I'm sure it'll change. But I think honesty as an artist is stuff that you would make for yourself no matter what. Because something in you feels like if you didn't make it, part of you will die and all that, you know, all that yucky stuff, right? You're like, ah. Now, doesn't mean that it's going to be something that the rest of the world will want to watch.
Right.
Right? And there's a dichotomy. So, but if we are all alike and if we're all the same, then I'm not any different from you or from Adam Sandler or from anybody else. So in that case, if you're all the same, then my honesty about what I want to watch will definitely resonate to most people because I'm like most people.
Right.
But it'll be nuanced by my individuality. It'll come from a core of who I am, where I grew up, how I grew up, came here, fish out of water, but I was fish out of water in Calcutta too.
Right.
You know? So you see, it doesn't really change. The pond just becomes bigger. You'll always be a fish out of water, you know? So I think that idea of trying to be true to yourself with what your stories are, and we've heard this so many times, I almost feel like I'm listening to something else that I'm saying this, but just being honest is, what is it that you want to make and how do you make it? Because the more personal it is, the more universal it'll be.
That's fantastic answer. I 100% agree with that.
You know, and that's all we can really do. Every time somebody's made a film to check off a box or to follow a trend, it may work once in a while or most of the times, but you can see the difference when a film that is coming from a place of who they really are, like, let's say Everything Everywhere All at Once right now. This is who those guys are. This is who they are, right. You know? They could say, oh my God, you know what? Let's just do a really cool film of the subject and let's make it more Asian, because that's, you know, it's not that. They are, this is who they are. And that honestly shows, and that's what flows, man. And that's, and the challenge is that where do you, how do you make it in a way that you have the support of the machinery? That's where I think filmmakers like me don't, well, could use some help, is, that is a, those are two different worlds. And sometimes you get the help.
You hit it out of the park with that answer. Honesty is everything. Where can people find you if they want you to direct something, or if they want to find your work? Where can people find you online?
Well, it's my first and last name, together.com. That's my website.
Spell it out, because people are dumb.
Sorry, guys, this is ridiculous. It's Vikram Dasgupta, VikramDasgupta .com. That is my website. And my Instagram, which is not that busy at all, is Vik Dasgupta. So VikramDasgupta. That's awesome. It. So,
well, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, Vikram. You are a tremendous filmmaker. I hope you always keep making movies. You have an unlimited guest pass to be on this show whenever you have featured work.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
I look forward to more of your movies, and we're going to collaborate on something soon.
I look forward to that, and I love you, bro. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. On behalf of Vikram, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.